This is DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg.
Well, take your pick today, guys, because there's more than enough to choose from, and I think we'll probably go all over the place and cover it all in the next couple hours. We're going to get to some Jets, which we haven't even hit on as of yet with the news the last few days. But, you know, let's just mix it up, and we'll start, I guess, just to begin with the Yankees and the fact that they are just continuing to roll. And, Mr. Canty, they are doing it in just a ridiculously matter-of-fact fashion right now. And Gerrit Cole hasn't even been anywhere near at his best yet.
No, he hadn't been at his best yet, but he looked good in his Pinstripes debut, the first time pitching in Yankee Stadium for the Yankees. And he went out there and he had a solid performance. I mean, six innings, what, he had one earned run? I mean, you feel pretty good about that, only allowing five hits. I just think that Gerrit Cole has kind of been steady. He's been what the Yankees have needed. But the reality is there wasn't going to be a lot of pressure on Gerrit Cole in the regular season because you had a lineup that could manufacture a lot of offense. And that's the thing with the Yankees. You don't know where it's going to come from, but you know that somebody on any given night is going to be able to swing a hot bat and put up a lot of runs on the scoreboard. And that's exactly where Yankees pitchers find themselves. They get a lot of run support. And so Gerrit Cole has been what we need him to be. But more importantly, your lineup is producing runs. And last night, Gio Urshela came up with another huge home run, a three-run shot in the sixth that blew the game open. So, I mean, the Yankees always have somebody playing the hero. It's a different person almost on every given night, although Aaron Judge did have a streak of five straight games with home runs. But, I mean, there really aren't a whole lot of concerns about this Yankees team in the regular season because they are just that talented.
They're almost too good that it's boring at this point.
Yeah.
I mean, I know the season's only started. I mean, just started, but it's almost like they're so good that there's really nothing, you know, overly interesting to talk about. I mean, Paxton's fastball is clearly a concern, but when you got, you know, you got Gardner hitting opposite field home runs, you got Stanton stealing bases. I mean, we're not even talking about
that. That was his first opposite field home run, right? Of his career, right?
I was just,
yeah, the balls
it was
are juiced.
Third. It was a third, but one of them was an inside the park home run.
The balls are juiced. We all know it, but that's fine. Take advantage of it. I mean, seriously, we're sitting here talking about, you know, how good the Yankees are, and they've been great. And Chris, to your point, I mean, it seems like it's, you know, it's someone different every single night. I mean, Judge, obviously, and what LeMahieu have been able to do, but we're not even, you know, we're not even talking about the fact that, you know, Gleyber Torres is struggling at the plate, and Gary Sanchez has been brutal at the plate. I mean, that isn't even a topic of conversation because they just do what the Yankees have been doing, is just mowing people down.
You know, it is kind of remarkable, to your point, about them being boring because there's not anything that you really look at that say this is a major problem for them moving forward because everybody, they are so deep in so many positions. They are so deep in terms of the lineup. They are, I guess you can look at the starting pitching and wonder about Paxton and wonder about Tanaka a little bit, but there's so much backing them up in the depth of the bullpen still. I mean, you know, people were worried about losing Tommy Canley, Chris. I don't even look at that as a major problem. They've got so much depth that goes even beyond the top 13 guys with pitching
overall.
Well, you
don't overall. Even have, Carly, you don't even have, you don't have Sessa back and you don't have your closer.
Yeah.
But I mean, Chapman's still locked down. Coming back soon though, right?
Yeah, Chapman yeah. is going to throw. He's going to Scranton. And working his way back, but same, and Sessa should be back soon. But this is the point. It is an embarrassment of riches, and it doesn't even become about winning 38 games. Now it becomes about, are they going to win 50? I mean, they might.
Well, here's the thing, Carlin. I mean, as a Yankees fan, whether they win 38 games, whether they win 50 games, I could care less. It's all about positioning yourself to be able to go on a run in the postseason, having the most favorable matchups early on in the playoffs, and then just trying to find the path to a championship because that's how we're going to judge this team. Nobody cares about what the Yankees are going to do in July and August. What we care about is what they're going to do by the time the postseason rolls around. I mean, we've had expectations for this team. Brian Cashman has been talking about not compromising the window for a dynastic run for several years now, but you got to win one championship, and they haven't been able to get it done. Now, you can point to a lot of different reasons, the Astros sign-stealing scandal, the Red Sox – with their cheating using electronics, but the reality is the Yankees have not won a championship, and we're waiting for this supremely talented team to be able to get it done. So everything that I see in the regular season, I look at through the lens of, is this something that I can rely on in the postseason? And so when I'm power ranking the list of concerns for the Yankees, at the top of them is James Paxton, because he's just not the same pitcher that we saw in the postseason last year.
But the good part about, I mean, the, I say good part, I mean, the luxury that you have with James Paxton is, you know, coming off the back surgery, I mean, clearly his, you know, his fastball isn't what you need it to be, but because, mm-hmm. you know, of the offensive support and the fact they just keep winning games, I mean, you have the luxury of keep putting him out there every fifth day until he figures it out.
Yep.
Because that's how good you are.
Yeah, and Tanaka is the guy that, with as a result of that, has to be what he normally is. And look, you look at his postseason, Tanaka's never a real concern in the playoffs. I mean, you're always going to feel very good about his situation. But look, that's the thing. We are down to the point of talking about the third starter for the postseason when we're so far away from it. But Chris, the other thing that bothers me about it, though, is really the way it's structured this year goes against the Yankees in every way. The fact that you're going to have the Yankees playing, if they were the top seed or the top two seeds in the American League, you're going to have them playing in the first round, and there's no true advantage between winning 50 games this year. There's really not, because all you're doing is getting the chance to stay home, but you're not going to have fans at the ballpark anyway. So
yeah, it feels like they are at a little bit of a disadvantage just because of how things shook out with how they had to structure the season, but I mean, under the circumstances, it is what it is. Nobody's going to make excuses for the Yankees. What I will say is the Phillies were in a tough spot last night, not having played a game in 8 days and then having to come to the Bronx to play against the Yankees. That was going to be a tall order. And, I mean, Jake Arrieta hadn't pitched a meaningful game going back to last August. So they had things stacked against them. And if you want to start questioning the integrity of the season and competitive balance, those are all valid questions, valid concerns for Rob Manfred in Major League Baseball. But again, it comes back to everybody is fighting against COVID-19. And so everybody is going to be made to feel a little bit uncomfortable, and nobody wants to hear excuses as to why you can't get it done. And as a Yankees fan, I don't look at the coronavirus as an out for the Yankees not living up to expectations in 2020.
I mean, this is a battle of attrition. I mean, that's really what it's going to come down to. I mean, you watched the Mets game last night. I mean, the Braves' best starting pitcher blows out his Achilles.
Yeah.
And that's going to have a huge effect on their season. So it's going to be, I mean, as talented as the Yankees are, I mean, it's going to come down to, you know, them staying healthy. I think that's really the biggest concern for this team now moving forward.
Well, the Mets can't help but be interesting. They can't help but provide us with stuff to talk about, even when things aren't going. Let's start with the good, though, to be fair, in that they finally scored runs for DeGrom. They finally were hitting in the clutch in when opportunities presented themselves. And DeGrom was just as good as he usually is until he gave up the runs a little bit later. But look, I mean, with his money, he could give up five runs and he deserves them to score seven, just considering how well he has pitched. I think, you know, when you are the Mets and you go through all that you have gone through, if you're not taking advantage, this is kind of the bare minimum that you can do, Rick. I mean, the bare minimum is to score runs when you have the best pitcher in the National League on your team. And
yeah,
win
did you
games
see the stat?
When that's the case.
Did you see the stat on Twitter? I know we've talked about this over the last couple of years, but I was looking through Twitter last night, and it says that in 66 starts since 2018, Jacob DeGrom is 21-17. Had the Mets been able to score four runs per game for him in those starts, he would have been 59-3 with 4-0 decisions.
That's why I said,
that's how good,
man,
he's been.
If Jacob DeGrom was pitching for the Yankees the last couple of years, you're talking about back-to-back 20-plus game winner. Like, that's what he would have been. There is no question in my mind.
He's probably on a streak like Cola's at the moment.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%.
Oh, absolutely.
He's the best pitcher in baseball. I don't think that's even debatable, Ricky. I think he's the best pitcher in baseball.
And it looks like he got better. I mean, with his uptick in velocity. I mean, listen, we have the luxury of being in New York. We probably have, I mean, you could make the argument if you would like. But in my opinion, you got the best pitcher in the National League, clearly, and you got the best pitcher in the American League, all in the same city.
Yes.
And, I mean, just the fact that you now have to have some sort of drama infused into the situation. I mean, first of all the guys that are going to cause it, who would have ever thought that Brandon Nimmo would have been, you know, Mr. Goody Two Shoes himself would have been the guy that actually brought into question as to what happened with Cespedes and the players knew about it. But nonetheless, I mean, I know this is something that we say every time around, but can just once there be one side to a story and that's it and you move on from it? Does it always have to include some sort of drama, some sort of misstep by the organization to cause this, to cause something? The Mets are amazing at turning a non-story into a five-day story. I mean, like, if that was a stat, they would have a dynasty.
Yeah, but that's what I didn't understand. I mean, I get the fact that you were, you know, you were upset with how Yoenis Cespedes handled it, right? I mean, the fact that he just got up and, you know, just didn't even check out of the hotel and left, and you were trying to embarrass him. But, I mean, you failed in trying to embarrass him. I mean, you saw how people reacted to that initial report. It was like, hey, take a step back. Let's not kill the Mets yet. Let's not kill Cespedes. Let's make sure he's okay first. Like, that's what they did, and they did it to themselves. Yeah, I mean, how many tweets did you read? Like, people like, okay, relax, take a step back. Like, let's not make a joke out of this yet because we don't know if Cespedes is okay. If you knew the whole time he was fine and he was just upset with his at-bats and his playing time and he was going to decide to leave, that was not how you craft a statement.
Not at all. I mean, why cast a cloud over that situation if you know what it's about? I mean, and I have a hard time believing that the Mets didn't have any insight that Cespedes was upset about his contract, that he could potentially opt out and use COVID as the reason why he could get out. Like, to me, I think what Brody Van Wagenen did during the game was completely unnecessary. Like, to issue that statement saying that you don't know where he is, and then you come to find out exactly where he is during the course of the game, and then you wait until after the game to release another statement, that to me is Bush League. Like, I don't understand why you would want to create all of that uncertainty in a situation where you have a pretty good idea of why the player went AWOL. Like, that was completely unnecessary. And so, to me, yeah, Cespedes is the bad guy, no doubt. But I don't know why the Mets decided they were going to dive in the mud with Cespedes. Like, just let him be the bad guy in this situation. Everybody's going to read it for what it is. A guy that's being selfish, putting himself before his teammates and the club, and let that be that. I don't understand why Brody Van Wagenen felt like he needed to hang on the rim and try to issue a statement to make him seem even more selfish. That was completely unnecessary.
They actually turned him into a sympathetic figure in the situation, and that was hard to do. And, you know, I was thinking about this last night. You know, we always talk about how the Knicks are not an attractive place to come anymore because you have all the drama around them that happens. And as much as the sale you hope goes through, when you see management, when you see people handle situations like this, if you're another player, aren't you paying attention to this at some point? Aren't you saying that why would I want to go there if the money is remotely comparable when they can't get out of their own way on the easiest things? And they're going out of their way in this instance to make a player look bad when, in essence, the player could have just done it on his own, Rick.
Well, because, I mean, for the most part, I mean, the players that the Mets signed, I mean, they end up giving, you know, the extra year or two that they weren't going to get anywhere else. Right? I mean, where else was Jed Lowrie going to get that deal? Where was, you know, Todd Frazier going to get the extra year of that deal? I mean, it's like they give a retirement package to older players that don't have any other options.
Yeah, the return on investment for the Mets has been awful, especially when it comes to players that used to be represented by Brody Van Wagenen, like the Jed Lowrie deal and the Cespedes deal. I mean, when Mets fans take a look back at those contracts, those are going to be some of the worst contracts that were given out in franchise history. They're terrible.
The only thing that makes it attractive, Carlin, is if you're an older player, it's the extra year, the extra money. And if you're a younger player, or maybe even if you're an older player too, is it seems like you get to do whatever you want. Like there's no set of rules.
But you know what, Ricky? Maybe that'll end up changing though. Because when you do have a new owner, you'll potentially have new management. Because I find it hard to believe that whoever owns the team is going to look at the job that Brody's done the last couple of years and think that he deserves the right to be the general manager moving forward. Maybe, you know, a fresh start and turning the page on this chapter of the Mets history, maybe that won't loom over players in baseball. Maybe they won't look at the Mets as this situation where they don't know what the hell they're doing.
Well, there has been a common denominator, and that's ownership, right?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So once you move on from that, maybe that changes. Yeah.
But the other thing, too, is, though, I'm a huge proponent of having the right mix of young and old, right? Like having that, you know, really solid veteran presence, but also having that, you know, young team. They feed off each other, right? Like the young guys bring the energy and the older guys hold the younger guys accountable, showing what it means to be a pro and everything. I mean, there's clearly been a huge void since they've lost David Wright. And they're not flush with, you know, the pros pro kind of, you know, veteran that's going to, you know, show these guys.
They don't have a Freddie Freeman to set things up for Ronald Acuna and Ozzie Albies and Mike Soroka. They don't have a guy like that in that clubhouse. I mean, I feel like you got guys that want to be leaders. Like Pete Alonso wants to be a leader, but he just doesn't know how. I mean, Jacob deGrom, I feel like his performance lends itself to him being a leader, being a voice in that clubhouse, but I feel like you need an everyday player that can really grab this team by the throat and get them to focus on what the task at hand is and not all the dysfunction around them. Because there's a ton of dysfunction within the organization. They can't get out of their own way. But sometimes players, by virtue of their leadership styles, can get the guys in the clubhouse to focus on what they're doing, and you get decent results. I guess the Mets just don't have that right now. And I guess that's the explanation that we've all been looking for as to why you can have a team as talented as they are underachieve at the start of the season.
I don't think there's any question that they are absolutely lacking that kind of a presence at the moment. And it has to be an everyday player. And you're right. And this is not a knock on Pete, but it feels like he's trying really, really hard to be a leader. And I don't know that you can always be in that situation. Rick, you guys can answer this better than me, but obviously much better. The guys who try to be a leader, do they get people to follow them if they're really outwardly, you know, rah-rah trying to do it?
No, see, I don't think that's his problem. I think the, you know, when you rely on a guy going into his second year to be your leader, I mean, that's a tall task for a young player, man. I mean, you're trying to focus on, you know, what you're doing on the field, having success, and at the same time trying to lead a group of men. I mean, that is not an easy thing to do. And I don't think he's trying too hard. I mean, I think he's to produce. I think at the moment he's trying too hard because he realizes how important he is to this team. But I mean, that to the original point is that's when you need to have veterans to take some of that pressure off of Pete Alonso, mm-hmm. to feel like he has to be that guy every single day. Because to be a leader, I mean, Carl, it's a choice you make every single day. That regardless of, you know, performance, regardless of what's going on in your life, you show up every single day to that clubhouse and you're the same guy, same energy level, same everything every single day. And that's, you know, most young players grow into that. Like, you'll eventually grow into that role. But that doesn't, I mean, that's, most guys can't handle doing both that early on in a career.
Yep, which is why it's important to have some steady hands in the locker room, veteran presence, guys like Brett Gardner for the New York Yankees. Like, you need players like that around, and it just doesn't feel like the Mets have enough of those guys. They just don't. I mean, the veteran guys that they have around that have the resume are more concerned about themselves than they are about the team's development and trying to get them to a point where they can compete consistently for the playoffs. So, you know, I'm hoping that the change in ownership will change the culture and how they do business. But right now, I mean, it's just too sporadic for me. Like, the Mets are capable of having those offensive outbursts like we saw last night. But even in yesterday's win, there were still things that you want to see them improve on.
I tell you talk about inconsistency. Man, was I disappointed with how the Rangers played yesterday. I mean, that was freaking brutal. I mean, look, I understand that, first of all, let's not turn Mrazek into, you know, Dominic Hasek quite yet.
Yeah, but time out.
He was good.
Listen, by resume, he's not Dominic Hasek. But, I mean, that's all you ask from a goalie in a playoff series.
Yes.
Is to make the saves you're supposed to, and then the occasional, the one you saw in Howden, the one you saw in Zibanejad, like those occasional big saves in big moments.
The one from Howden, the one that was right at him? Yeah, you should make that save.
Rico, how big was the save on the Zibanejad chance at the end of the first period?
It was huge. And here's the thing, though. And Chris, I'm going to speak to you in terms of the NFL. What happens with a team like Carolina, in the most important thing headed into tonight's game, is the Rangers have to find some way to score the first goal. Because they get down early, they start chasing. You saw it. I mean, Hank should have had the first one. I'm not going to blame Hank, but that's the kind of save you need to make, knowing the circumstances that you're in. Second goal wasn't great either. But, you know, those two quick ones, you could just tell the bench was just demoralized. When you play a team like Carolina, and the reason why I'm saying the first goal is so important is because once they score the first goal, it's the equivalent of playing a team like the Tennessee Titans, right? And if you let the Tennessee Titans get an early lead, now they can fall back on what they do really well, which is slam the football down your throat with Derrick Henry.
Yeah.
You're not making them uncomfortable. You have to you have to make a team like Carolina uncomfortable, so they do have to take extra chances that when they have the lead, they don't have to take. And Panarin's got to be better. Their top six forwards have to be better. Bottom line. And Hank needed to make a couple big saves last night, and he didn't. Yesterday afternoon, he didn't.
I think, Chris, I look at that, and I thought that Carolina was everything that the Rangers needed to be. You know,
but Carolina's got the experience, too. Let's not forget that. I mean, when you look on paper and you saw the Rangers play the way that they played, you got, I mean, a guy who's, you know, a finalist for the MVP, you know, Zibanejad with the 41 goals, had an unbelievable season. I mean, I think Shesterkin would make a big difference, believe it or not, in this series with how he plays, how he handles the puck. I think that's a huge loss for them. I think losing Lemieux for the first couple games with the amount of, you know, emotion, physicality he can bring would have been a big boost in the first two games. I think you'll see that tonight. But, I mean, this Carolina team was in the Eastern Conference Finals last year. So they have the experience. And right now, their best players, I mean, Aho's been good. Svechnikov had the hat trick last night. I mean, their best players have shown up.
Unbelievable. Yeah, it just seems like the overall intensity for Carolina in the entire 60 minutes is higher than the Rangers. And at some point, the Rangers have got to figure out a way to neutralize that. And I thought that chance that Zibanejad had, I mean, you're talking about them taking the first lead in the series. That would have been huge, not only from a momentum standpoint, but from a confidence standpoint. It just feels like the Hurricanes are more confident than the Rangers right now, and I don't know who's going to help the Rangers shift that dynamic. But it's got to happen in a hurry. It's got to happen tonight, and the odds are against them.
Rick, did you?
This is always the toughest game.
Well, you were talking about the first goal, right? Did you? I didn't think they were really dead until that stretch early in the second period when they scored twice in less than 2 minutes. I thought that's when I thought Rangers are dead here. That's where I thought that the wind.
That's where they gave up the ghost.
Yeah, yeah.
It did feel.
Am I wrong?
A little bit.
No, you're not wrong. No, you're not wrong. But the point I was making is that, you know,
they need to get off their back.
Well, no, a game against a team like Carolina, who, you know, can clog things up and play that well, put that much pressure on you defensively, is you got to make that team uncomfortable. And the way you make a team like that uncomfortable is getting an early lead, making them chase the game a little bit. And because they scored the first goal again, they can fall back into what they do their best, which is put tons of pressure on you, force turnovers. I mean, you're playing into their strength. And that wasn't a goal. And listen, Hank's a Hall of Famer. We all understand that. And he's carried this team for a long time. But that is, you can ask him. He would tell you, if we had him on the show right now, he would tell you that first goal is unacceptable.
That was a softie. I mean, that looked like a softie on the short side.
They went through them. Yeah, you can't. I mean, you can't let pucks go through you like that. I mean, a short side goal in between, you know, your chest and your blocker is not something Hank would say he should give up.
Rico, you sound like you put this game two loss on him more so than you did the game one loss on him.
No, I mean, it's on the whole team. I don't want to just single him out, but I think it's probably. I think
you're saying that
starts,
he's got more blame. He's got more blame in game two than he did in game one.
Well, I just know the effect the goalie has on his team. Like the mind, like the confidence of a team usually runs through how well your goalie's playing, and you know that feeds into, you know, your performance on the ice. And to have that happen again after the first, I mean, after the start of game one, where you lose one of your best players and they score in the first minute, I mean that's not how you draw it up.
Yeah, they're not a confident team. They're not a confident team right now. And just listening to some of the things that Coach Quinn is saying, it's just like, okay, they're waiting for something to happen. They're waiting for a switch to flip, and it hasn't happened. And so I look at that, and you can tell, you know, after the beginning of that second period, like they just didn't have any confidence. They didn't believe that they could win that game. And so I guess my question is, what's going to change tonight? Because it feels like two dominating performances by Carolina in the first two games of this series.
Well, I think part of what could change is you may see a goalie change. which I would understand. It could be Georgie. I don't know what Shesterkin's availability is. I think bringing Lemieux and his physicality will help kind of set the tone. Mm-hmm. I think the one thing the Rangers lack, because you asked how do they turn it around. I mean, the only way the Rangers really turn it around with how they're constructed is, to tie it up or score a goal. Like, the beauty of what the Islanders have with their fourth line, it's their energy line. I don't even want to call it a fourth line because that's disrespectful. But, like, if all of a sudden you're watching an Island game, like you'll watch today, and, you know, all of a sudden, because we all know sports is about, I mean, NFL, NBA, NHL, it's, you know, once a team, you know, takes hold of the momentum, mm-hmm. how do you capitalize on that momentum? And if you're the other team, how do you stop the momentum? And, like, when you watch the Islanders, if all of a sudden it's a goal or it's a bad shift or it's a couple bad shifts, you send Cizikas, Martin, and Clutterbuck out, and all of a sudden they're running around smashing people.
Yeah, it's going to get real physical when those guys are on the ice.
Yeah, and all of a sudden now your bench perks up. You're like, okay, all right, we're back. Okay, yep, the ship has been steady. Let's get going. The Rangers don't really have that. They don't have that presence in their lineup.
I'm fascinated to see how that plays out tonight because – right now, it feels like they're going with a whimper. And I hate to put it that way, but I haven't seen anything in these first couple of games to make me think otherwise.
They got to have a better start. I mean, they have to have a better start. Yeah. I mean, they have to, in my opinion, score the first goal, gain some confidence over, from that. And then, you know, their guys got to show up. I mean, Kreider's got to be better. Panarin's got to be better. I mean, they have to find a way. I mean, that's what separates teams in the playoffs. Is when, because you know going into a game, you're looking over your game plan. I mean, the Rangers are trying to shut down Svechnikov and Aho, and they haven't been able to do it. And mm-hmm. on the reverse of that, Carolina's trying to shut down Panarin, Zibanejad, and Kreider. And, I mean, Panarin had two shots yesterday. He scored on one and missed it on the other one. That's not enough. Kreider's got to be better. I mean, he's the guy. He's the big, you know, big, fast, physical guy that's got to, you know, set the tone for his team. And for the most part, he hasn't done it.
You know, Rick, I... It's funny. I look at this from a Rangers standpoint. And I know that they're still a very young team. I am surprised that they have not played better so far in this series. Am I wrong to say that when I look at them, I felt like it would be a much more competitive series than it has been?
I think we all did. I mean, when you looked at the series before it started, I mean, I thought the Rangers had a really good chance to win the series, but I think the, you know, that was with Shesterkin in net for me, and the fact that you don't have him, and I get he's, you know, he's younger and hasn't experienced NHL playoff hockey. I think this is a little bit different because there's no home ice and you're playing in front of an empty building. I just think his skill set plays well in the series. And, I mean, you also have to take into account that, I mean, what you saw last from the Rangers wasn't necessarily what you were going to see now because of mm-hmm. the extended layoff. And I think there is something to be said about having, you know, having that experience, which the Rangers lack and Carolina has.
Yeah, but I guess that's why I look at this opportunity as one that you would have felt good about Shesterkin being able to get just because moving forward, he's going to be your guy. Like the long-term future in net for the Rangers is not Henry Lundqvist. It's going to be Igor Shesterkin. And so just to have him get that opportunity, I understand you want to compete, you know, and try to win as many games as you can and try to advance in the postseason. But ultimately, this is about building toward the future, right? This isn't just about 2020. This is about what JD and David Quinn are trying to put together moving forward. And Shesterkin is going to be a big part of that. So I just felt like if it was possible to have him out there, you would have loved to see him out there. I guess the whole thing with the NHL not disclosing a player's status with COVID and all of those different things, I guess that's just what it is. But them saying that he's unfit to play, it leaves a question mark there that just doesn't feel right.
Yeah, I mean, it's a weird designation. I mean, that's the blanket statement now in the NHL.
Yeah.
Is that, you know, if you can't play, you're unfit to play, regardless of the circumstances. So, yeah, I mean, it feels weird because you saw him playing the exhibition game. And then, you know, leading into that game, you know, even when you heard Lundqvist after game one was, you know, night before that game, it was going to be Shesterkin's net. Mm-hmm. And then something happened, injury, tweak, whatever it ends up being. And, you know, Hank ends up being the guy. And he's been fine. I mean, Hank's been fine. But, I mean, a lot of the time, you know, in these kind of situations, especially when you have an inexperienced team, you know, you rely on a guy like Hank who's been there, done that, mm-hmm. to, you know, he's not the reason you lost. But he's not the reason that you won either. You know what I mean? Like there has to be, you know, there are those games that, you know, you need a big save. And last night, yesterday afternoon, they didn't get those big saves that they needed. But, I mean, the positive is this, too. You don't see Shesterkin, but, I mean, the younger guys have stepped up. I mean, Kakko's look good. Like, I mean, there is reason to be excited if you're a Rangers fan. I just get a little bit frustrated that, you know, it's been your horses that, you know, have been, you know, lacking in the first two games.
800-919-3776. 800-919-ESPN. It's Carlin in for Rothenberg today with the fellas. You know, one thing we've been wanting to get to for a couple of days involves the Jets. First of all, C.J. Mosley opts out over the weekend. And to me, this was absolutely crushing, Chris. I mean, any chance that the Jets had to try to survive moving on from their best defensive player just got absolutely knocked out the window with Mosley being their, frankly, their second best defensive player, and it wasn't that far off. When this guy's healthy, I think we all do forget, even though the Jets overpaid for him, just how good of a player he was with the Ravens. And I hate to even boil it down to this, how good of a player he was in that first half at the beginning of the season last year. I mean, this was just crushing for them.
Yeah, Carlin, I know a lot of Jets fans really don't know what they have in C.J. Mosley, but I do because I played with him. When we drafted him in Baltimore, we called him half man, half amazing because the things that he was doing, you're not used to seeing a young inside linebacker be able to do. And so, yeah, he's a playmaker. And he impacts your defense, and having him as your signal caller and the man in the middle would have alleviated a lot of the pressure that the loss of Jamal Adams creates on everybody else. But the fact that you're not going to have him and you're not going to have Jamal, you're wondering who Greg Williams is going to look at as a guy that can be that game changer, that ultimate chess piece in order to dictate to opposing offenses. And, you know, I look across the board at the Jets defense, I just don't see that guy. I mean, we all like Avery Williamson as an inside linebacker, but Avery Williamson is coming off of an ACL, and we don't know what he's going to be. He started training camp on the puppy list. So I don't know where your playmakers on the defensive side of the ball are going to come from. Everybody's been talking about how good Quinnen Williams looks, and how they're expecting this huge jump from year one to year two. But we saw mixed reviews in his rookie season. So I don't know what to expect from the Jets defense. And that was the identity of the team in 2019. Like, that was going to be the thing that they hung their hat on coming into this season. That's supposed to be the area of the team that makes things easier for Sam Darnold and for Adam Gase. And now you don't have that to rely on. So I don't know what's going to happen with the Jets, but the outlook was grim after we saw the Jamal Adams trade. Now it's just going to be worse with no C.J. Mosley.
Especially early on in the season, right? I mean, C.J. Mosley, I mean, he gave you a glimpse in week one. I mean, you were like, okay, this defense is going to be legit. Then all of a sudden he has the groin and he's gone for the entire season. But, I mean, under the current circumstances with no TAs and everything else, who knows what training camp's going to look like. I mean, you were going to rely on your defense to win the day for at least the first – what'd you say, a month of the season?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, there's going to be some growing pains with that offense.
Yeah, I would probably go as far to say the first six games of the season, Rick, the first third of the season, until your offense can find its bearings and get its footing, because we know that offense takes a little longer to come around than the defensive side of the ball, especially when you don't have the offseason with OTAs and minicamp.
And you have a completely new offensive line.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I just don't know. I mean, I get Greg Williams. I mean, what he was able to do with that team last year with, you know, limited talent, you still did have an all-pro with Jamal Adams. I mean, I don't care how good a coach you are. It does boil down to how much talent you have on the field.
There's
a loss of C.J. Mosley. They don't have much of it.
But you know what, Rick? It just, for some reason, I'm sitting here looking at the news right now that Brian Winters just agrees to a contract with the Buffalo Bills. But I'm sitting here thinking about the decision to release Brian Winters and save that $7.3 million on your salary cap. I got to believe there's a subsequent move. I got to believe they made that decision because they got to go out and get a playmaker on the defensive side of the ball. That has to be what it's about.
Clowney? You think they're going to go get Clowney?
It's got to be something, Carlin. Look at their defense.
I know.
Tell me who the playmaker is on their defense.
No, I totally agree. Look, they need, to me, pass rush was it no matter what, even if those two guys were playing. But you did, there's two funny things here, right? Either you go out and you add one of those guys, or you figure out a way to get Ngakoue here and you pay him. But think about it. If you're Jamal and they just had Mosley opt out and they just had, and they cut winners, that money to get paid was actually there now. I don't think, I don't know that he necessarily would have, but I mean, Rick, he could have gotten the cash right here.
Yeah, but that wasn't something that Joe Douglas was going to do. I mean, Joe Douglas was not going to pay. It didn't feel like he was going to pay Jamal Adams. And Jamal Adams didn't want to be here, man. He doesn't want to deal with the dysfunction and the losing and everything else. I mean, he fashions himself a winner, and he got exactly what he wanted.
And he would have stayed here had he gotten his number, though, like you talked about. Like, had they paid him what he wanted to get paid, he would have absolutely stayed here and put on a smile and be a company man, no question about it. But I guess when I look at it from the Jets' standpoint, it's, you know, you have to ask yourself, are you ready to win now? And if you're not ready to win now, does paying Jamal put you on a road where, you know, you're moving closer to that point? And I guess Joe Douglas and Adam Gase answered that question with no. And that's why they made the decision to move him. But now, seeing that you don't have Jamal, seeing that C.J. Mosley opted out, you got to find some way to be able to support your young quarterback. And when I say support a young quarterback, that includes the defensive side of the ball. That unit being good, that unit being able to create field position and extra possessions, I just think that the Jets have got to go out there and do something. Like, to me, you would not cut Brian Winters at this point in the offseason unless you needed those cap dollars to go out there and make a move to bring in another playmaker.
Well, here's the one thing, though, that kind of screws it all up, though, for next year is the contract for Mosley just stops, and it picks up next year. So next year, you, after 2 years, if you did want to move on from him, if he really was crushing your cap that much, you would have had a dead number, but you would have been able to save $5 million. Now that's put off for another year. So with him just being in the second year of his contract next season and the cap dropping, that actually could hurt you even more next year.
No, it does. And from C.J. Mosley's perspective, he's not tripping because he's already got a $10 million bonus that was paid out earlier this year.
Yep.
So he's set. Like, there really was no downside to him opting out other than not being able to play the game that he loves. But there really was no downside for him to opt out. But for the Jets, it's going to limit some of their financial flexibility moving forward, which is why I'm saying now they got to be aggressive about adding talent on this team, especially talent on the defensive side of the ball. And with all of those draft picks that they got from the Seattle Seahawks, maybe they're interested in trading for somebody and giving them a contract extension. Maybe Yannick Ngakoue is in play. Maybe Jadeveon Clowney on a short-term deal is in play. I don't know. I don't have the answers to that question. But they got to do something, guys. They just can't sit pat with the team that they have now and expect for this team to be competitive. But more importantly, expect for Sam Darnold to have the supporting cast that he's going to need in order to continue to develop into the franchise quarterback.
Yeah, this year is too important not to make a move.
Yeah,
I mean, and there's talent available. I mean, Carlin, this is a question for you and Canty. Who do you think the longest tenured New York Jet on the roster is currently?
Jordan Jenkins.
Jordan Jenkins and Steve McClendon, 2016.
Holy cow. Wow.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, it's been good. They've done a good job of drafting and developing.
Yeah, they got a lot out of Quincy Enunwa for that contract too. By the way, one catch for minus 4 yards after he got the contract.
Wow,
for $20 million. Thanks, Mike McCagnan. Keep giving you.
But this season is way too important for your head coach and your quarterback to go into it with your defense the way it's at. I mean, the way it looks now.
Yeah,
I'll tell you what it is. Ngakoue, Clowney, that's spicy meatball right there.
Listen, if you don't make a move on your defense to add some talent, if it's, you know, Everson Griffin, Clowney, Logan Ryan.
Logan Ryan still out there?
Oh, yep. Yeah. We thought we agreed to a deal. Apparently we didn't. That was months ago. But, I mean, and I'm not trying to be negative. I'm just being, you know, realistic. If this defense goes into the season exactly how it is today, who wins more games, the Jets or the Dolphins?
Oh, the Dolphins. I don't even hesitate with saying that. The Dolphins.
I totally agree.
Yeah.
Totally agree.
Which would be devastating. If, God forbid, the Jets, with what's going on in New England, and now, I mean, if you finish, and the Dolphins are supposed to be rebuilding, if you finish fourth in your division, are you kidding me? I mean, that's...
If you're going into the season as you're presently constituted, if they win 5 games, that's an upset.
With their schedule?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah,
I'm not going down that road again, Ricky. I'm not doing that again. I was nervous about that Bentley, man. I was real nervous.
Yeah, let's stay away from bets. All right, I'm gonna save you from you.
Rangers hockey is back. MSG is helping you throw the ultimate viewing party with a brand new home entertainment system and free food delivery during the game. For your chance to win, enter the Rangers Return sweepstakes at MSG Networks.
Yes. That's the remix. Yes. That's the remix.
I was trying to say Shesterkin. The Rangers Return sweepstakes at MSGNetworks.com/Rangers Sweeps or Ranger Sweeps. And enjoy Rangers-Canes. Enjoy Rangers-Canes while you can tonight at 8 on MSG Network. Rangers Return Sweepstakes presented by the New York Post and 98.7 ESPN. I can't get enough when they give the guy with the lisp all the S words in the read.
Trying to make you better.
Sweepstakes.
Cheesesteaks, what?
I would love a cheesesteak right now.
Oh, don't even. Ira in Staten Island going to start us off today. Ira, what's going on?
Hey, good morning to two Chris's and Rick. How are you guys? Hey, first of all, with Mosley, yeah, it's a big hit, but I respect and support his decision. Hope his family stays safe. But, you know, going forward with football, if they get started, listen, you know, Neville Hewitt had a good year last year. I know the defense took a big hit. You know, you lose Adams. I think this Brady McDougal is actually going to give them something. But, you know, the bottom line here is they got a lot of holes on that side of the ball. And you want to support Sam Darnold. I get it. You got to remember, last year when they finished 6-2, they weren't going up like against Drew Brees and Tom Brady every week. You know, they're going up some backup quarterbacks and this and that. So I think some of those defensive stats are a little skewed. But, you know, going forward here, Chris, I spoke with you and Dave last week, you know, and you guys kind of turned me to think they should go out and give somebody big money. But the more and more I think about it, it's the uncertainty of how this year is going to play out. To give somebody a one-year deal and throw out some money, I feel it's a wiser move to just carry over the money for next year. You want to go sign a Logan Ryan on 1 year because you need a corner, that's fine. If you want to trade Theonic and you get a long-term answer, that's great. I have no problem with that. We'll give him a contract. But, you know, to give Clowney, you know, $17, $18 million for 1 year and then, you know, may have a half a season, I just think that would be typical Jets. I would rather save the money for next year when hopefully everything will be back to normal.
Well, Ira, you're saying save the money for next year, but what happens to Sam Darnold in the interim? Like, this is a huge year for Sam Darnold. Like, year three is the year that you look at and you say, okay, do I have a player or do I need to start thinking about other options at the position? And you can't afford not to add more talent to this roster in order to try to help Sam as much as you can. You can't push it off to next year and assume that Sam Darnold is going to continue to take steps forward in his career. That's not how this works. All you got to do is look at what happened to Mitch Trubisky in his third year in Chicago. And he had a good defense.
But you got to give Sam a receiver. You know, in the defensive side of the ball, you know, yeah, maybe they got better field position, but that's not going to ultimately make or break Sam. You know, Sam, you know, he's got to put on his big boy pants now, and he's got to, you know, better quarterback. Franchise quarterbacks make talent around. He makes weaker talent look better because he's a good quarterback, and that's time for Sam to do that now.
Yeah, you know, but that would assume that you have enough talent around him on the offensive side of the ball, which I would make the argument that you don't. And that doesn't, well, I mean, listen. I think to Chris's point, it's not just the field position and everything else. It's also, if all of a sudden, in you know, I think he tries to do too much sometimes because there isn't enough talent around him. I mean, his biggest flaw is bad decision-making and turning the football over. If, God forbid now, because your defense stinks, you get behind early and he's forced to throw the ball over the football field, that's not going to play into his strengths at all. It's going to expose him.
No, it won't. I get that. But like I said, you know, if you want to get somebody, you know, on a reasonable amount, that's fine. And I understand the winter's move. They probably are going to sign somebody. But I just can't go out and spend crazy money for somebody for a one-year deal. Because
why?
No, but Ira, how are you going to get the guy? How are you going to get the guy if you don't? That's my whole point. What is the hook for the Jets to be attractive to prospective free agents if it's not money? It ain't winning. So how are you going to get him, Ira?
Yeah, I know. But you're falling into the same trap. I mean, I go back so far. You know, the Jumbo Elliots of the world, the Steve Atwaters of the world.
That's not Jadeveon Clowney. Those guys were much further down the line, Ira. Thanks for the call. The problem, don't forget this. The cap can go down $24 million next year.
Yeah.
And you now had that money for Mosley just shift to next year. So if you're going to try, and you just lose two great defensive players, if you're going to try to win while you're still not paying the quarterback, doing it now when you have $30 million in cap room all of a sudden to work with, not the worst idea in the world.
No, it's not the worst idea in the world. And to Rick's point, I mean, if you have a defense that isn't as talented as they were in 2019, Sam Darnold's going to feel pressure to do more. Like, he's going to realize I have less margin for error, and I don't necessarily think that lends itself to getting better performances from Sam Darnold, to getting more consistency from him. So, you know, I hear what Jets fans are saying about how it's time for Sam to step up. But, I mean, you got to think about this. The kid has been dealt an unfair hand. You're talking about two different offensive systems in his first 2 years when he's just trying to figure out what the NFL is all about. Remember, when Sam Darnold was drafted, he had only had three competitive seasons as a quarterback, one in high school, two in college. And then you're going to look at him in the NFL and he says, oh, he's got new systems in his first 2 years. And now all of a sudden we're going to expect him to take this quantum leap in year three with not a lot of talent around him on the offensive side of the ball. But hey, because he was drafted third overall, he's got to elevate the talent of all the players around him? That's not going to work.
You got to have one or the other. You have to have one or the other for a young quarterback. You have to have a really good defense, or you have to have some really good weapons around him. And right now, they don't have either.
Is Russell Wilson a pretty good quarterback?
Yeah.
Okay.
He's one of the best
Russell Wilson come into one of the best defenses in the National Football League when he started out?
Yes, he did.
Exactly. Like, it's not rocket science. You see examples of it throughout the NFL. Like, you have to be able to support a young quarterback. And it's with a lot of talent around him on the offensive side of the ball or a really good defense. There's a couple different ways you can do it. The Jets don't have either.
Don't forget, Mark Sanchez went to two AFC championship games. Why?
Pretty good defense, right?
Exactly.
Yep.
Exactly.
I don't understand. What are you saving the money for?
What are you saving the money for? That's a great
question.
I don't.
Are you going to get a credit? I mean, are we going to get some kind of credit for next season? I don't understand.
Let's go to Marlon in Brooklyn next on 98.7 ESPN. Marlon, what do you got, man?
Good morning, guys. Chancey, thank you for the Super Bowl and all that good stuff.
I
was talking about the Jets. I wanted to know if you think the guys should sign AB and Clowney like a one-year, you know, kind of cheap deal, like a prove yourself kind of thing. And, you know, that's about it. You guys have a great day.
AB, no.
Yeah. Can't do that. Yeah. Can't do it.
Yeah, that's not going to happen. You thought Jamal Adams was a headache at the end.
Oh, my God.
You have no idea about Antonio Brown.
Yeah, that's not going to help Sam.
No, not at all. I mean, Jadeveon Clowney, listen, that's a decision that the organization has to make. If you're going to do something, I would do it short-term with him. I don't like the prospects of giving him a lot of guaranteed money that goes into future years just because I don't know that the production that you're going to get from him is warranted. But Jadeveon Clowney is a game wrecker. Like, he's an impact player. He's somebody that the opposing offense has to game plan around. Right now, when I look at the Jets' defense, they don't have anybody like that.
Well, I just got a text message from Bart. He said, don't sleep on Marcus May is what he texted me.
Oh, is that it? Yeah, Marcus May is more talented than Jamal Adams, right?
Tell Chris Canty he's sleeping on Marcus May. That's what the text says.
Oh, okay. Maybe I am.
I'll nap comfortably. when he's the only guy, I mean, I know he's a good player, but when he's the only guy, that's where the real issue comes from. And what do we always talk about? When we see these teams that have success, they always have great pass rushers. They always have guys who can get to the quarterback because it completely changes the dynamic for the rest of the defense. It covers up your holes in the rest of the defense.
Yeah, or you have, I mean, you have one or the other, right? Or, I mean, if you're lucky, you have both. But, I mean, if you have a questionable secondary, you need to put pressure on the quarterback.
Yes.
And right now, I would say that the secondary for the New York Jets is questionable, and you don't have no one to get after the quarterback.
That's a problem, I think.
I would imagine that sounds like a problem.
That's a problem, I think.
And he played the game professionally. So yeah. I'm gonna go with what he thinks. Yeah. Let's hit Omar in East Brunswick. Omar, what's going on?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good.
Good. Rick, I'm very excited for the Islander game today.
Can't wait.
I know. Me neither, man. I hope they can pull it out today. So
they'll be fine.
Yeah, I think so, too. So I think it's a good thing that the Rangers are down 2-0. It makes it even better.
So you're just a bad guy now. I'm just a bad guy.
So I just want to – I think you're absolutely right. I think we have to sign an edge rusher or somebody because I really don't think – even if there is not going to be a season, you still have to go out there and you have to give Greg Williams some tools to work with. You know, you can't just leave him with our all-star Marcus May, like Bart says, you know. But I mean, you just can't go in. I just seriously can't imagine going into this year without an edge rusher or without a difference maker. You know, it was a couple months ago, Logan Ryan, all those reports, he was supposed to come to us, and now that's all ghosted. It's all gone. So I don't know what's going on. I hope that we can sign the pass rusher because that's going to be so important, and hopefully Greg Williams is going to do good things with him and put him in the situations where he can impact the game, like where he put Jamal in and where Jamal impacted the games. So that's just my call today, and I hope you guys have a wonderful day. And let's go Islanders, Rick.
I agree, man. Listen, you're being a bad guy with the whole Rangers thing. I mean, I hate to even say it or admit it, but I mean, it's better for me in loving to talk hockey if the Rangers were competitive and won the series, but I mean, we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens tonight. But as far as the Jets concerned, no one's going to want to hear excuses. If the Jets don't have a good season, I mean, people will still be equally as outraged if there was no, you know, pandemic and everything else. People will still be upset if this team doesn't have a good season.
Yeah, I would completely agree with that. I don't think Jets fans are giving this team a pass, and they recognize that there were some spots where you could improve on the talent level. But, I mean, this was Joe Douglas's first full off season, and you had Adam Gase and him being able to work the draft together. So it's just like, okay, you're having a chance to infuse the roster with the talent that you need in order to build your program, and you need to see some tangible steps forward. If they don't take any steps forward, I don't think you can – I mean, listen, there are still some remnants of Mike Maccagnan's decisions that are, you know, restricting the team to a degree. But, I mean, you can't continue to use Mike Maccagnan as the excuse as to why you can't have progress with the team's overall development and moving forward. So I'm with you. I don't think the Jets get a pass for this year. I absolutely don't.
Here's the other thing, though, that I think the Jet fan is going to find scary, and understandably so. They could have a situation where they won 5 or 6 games, but if Darnold really progressed this year, and let's just say 30 touchdowns, 10 interceptions, something like that, Adam Gase isn't going anywhere.
No.
And that's the last thing the Jet fan wants to hear.
Well, here's the thing. If Sam Darnold thrives under Adam Gase, I don't think Jets fans are really going to care who the head coach is. They just care about the quarterback being the franchise quarterback. Because, I mean, they haven't been able to find a franchise quarterback since Joe Namath. That's a long time ago. So, I mean, you just hope that Sam Darnold lives up to the promise when they took him with the 3rd overall pick a couple of years ago. You're just hoping that all the talent is able to come together and you start to see the production. You've seen it in spots. It hasn't been as consistent. And so I don't think Jets fans should necessarily care who the head coach is that brings it out of them just as far as they see it. As long as it gets to that point, then you're good. But if it doesn't get to that point, if you don't see it, then I think you start to have serious questions about whether or not Adam Gase should be your guy. Because you're starting to run out of time with Sam Darnold, and you're starting to get closer to having to make a decision long-term with him.
But my point would be, if they win 5 games and the Jet fan is going to scream and yell and point to other reasons why they won 5 games, like Gase. They just don't like Gase to begin with. They've never liked Gase. And I understand why, because of where he came from and the very little that he did in Miami. I'm with you, Chris. They should be thinking that way, that it's the most important thing this season is to develop the quarterback. Yes, you could try to go do some things to help him out so that he is not putting that much pressure on himself. But I absolutely see a scenario where the Jets aren't making a head coaching change and the fans are screaming and yelling despite the fact that Darnold took a major step forward.
It's in the best interest of Sam Darnold to have continuity with this head coach and the guy who calls the plays.
Yep.
So I don't care how much you hate Adam Gase. If they win 5 or 6 games, and the reason you won those 5 or 6 games is because Sam Darnold has shown everyone that he's capable of being a franchise quarterback, then you suck it up and you live with Adam Gase. They created their own problem here, though, because of how they handled the Mike Maccagnan situation and everything else. The timelines, unfortunately, don't really mesh the way they should. Like, a quarterback going into his third year in a rookie deal shouldn't be on a team that's still rebuilding.
Yeah. No.
You should be poised to take that huge step and start to actually win football games. And because you let Mike Maccagnan do what he did through the draft and free agency and everything else, and then fire him, and then bring in Joe Douglas, who signed a 6-year deal, he has a different mindset as to how he's approaching, this season.
Rick, where the Jets should be? The Jets should be where the Bills are right now.
Yeah.
Correct.
That's where they should be. That's where they should be. But that's the difference when you have a functional organization versus a dysfunctional organization. That's what it looks like when you have the head coach and the general manager on the same page, Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott, versus not with Todd Bowles and Mike Maccagnan. That's the difference. If Jets fans want to figure out what's the difference, that is the difference. And so you're saying, yeah, it's time for Sam to develop into that guy that can elevate the talent around him. Well, yeah, if the situation was ideal for the development of the quarterback in the first 2 years, but the Jets haven't had that around Sam.
Yeah, didn't we say that at the time too, Chris? And don't get me wrong. I like, as a man and as a defensive coordinator, I really appreciate Todd Bowles.
Yes.
But at the time, I think we said this, if you're going to trade up to draft a quarterback, if there's even a thought in your mind that Todd Bowles isn't going to be your head coach for the foreseeable future, for at least the next 3 to 5 years, then you should have made a change.
I completely agree. I completely agree with you. They blew it. That was the decision that they should have made, and they didn't make that decision. And you put Sam in a tough spot, because even though Mike Maccagnan had the foresight to make the move to trade the 3 second-round picks to move up 3 spots, you're not in a position where you could take advantage of it. You're not, because Sam should be the guy that is making everybody around him better, and you do have him on the cheap for a couple of more years, which means that you can put a lot more talent on your team, and you're poised to not just make a run to get in the playoffs, but to actually make some noise. But now you're talking about this team continuing to be in a rebuilding cycle and in a year or two forced to make a decision on giving Sam Darnold a top-of-the-market quarterback contract.
And then to make it worse?
You completely threw away the advantage of having a starting quarterback on a rookie deal.
And then to compound the problem, which is, what drove me crazy in the first place, is that, having been here for the last 20 years, I understand, New York fan bases and how, patience is not, one of their greatest qualities, is you end up hiring a coach that doesn't have a proven track record that it's not going to get the benefit of the doubt. So if he did struggle, if Adam Gase struggled early, people are going to be calling for Adam Gase's head, mm-hmm. as opposed to if he made the other decision, which was, Mike McCarthy wants the job. Oh, by the way, he's developed Brett Favre and Aaron Rodgers and won a Super Bowl. Like, I would feel more comfortable giving that guy the benefit of the doubt. Like, he'll figure it out eventually.
Oh, you can add Alex Smith to that list too, under Mike McCarthy. Yeah. Yeah. Another high first round pick quarterback. Yeah.
Mike and Yonkers next, 98.7 ESPN. Mike, what's up, bud?
Hey, Chris is in Rick. Thanks for taking my call, guys. Really appreciate it.
All right.
You got it. What's up?
I wanted to piggyback off of what Ira from Staten Island said, because I'm in between your guys' thoughts and his thoughts. I think that the Jets have constantly been trying to chase that 1-year, 2-year veteran deal for a guy to plug a hole. And as much as I would love to see Clowney rushing the edge for the Jets, I think that you guys made the point of that we are not addressing the issues that we need to address in the draft. And to your point about Sam Darnold having the tools, we addressed the offensive line this offseason with free agency and getting Becton over someone like Jerry Jeudy or CeeDee Lamb. We picked up Mims in the second round. We've spoken about Herndon the past couple of years, and he hasn't been able to stay on the field. And we have Bell, a veteran who last year struggled, but, showed signs of himself, and obviously he's a year older. But when are we going to just put it on Sam Darnold? I know that
which is always a benefit is to have a running back that's a year older coming off a bad year. I mean, that's not a benefit. I mean, he's a year older. That doesn't make him a better running back.
To your other point,
okay, you addressed the offensive line. Fingers crossed, you hope you did. And you also drafted Denzel Mims. If you had a regular offseason with rookie minicamps, OTAs, a full preseason with preseason games and everything else, it's hard enough for those two positions to translate immediately from college to the NFL level. Now with no OTAs, no preseason games and everything else, it's probably safe to assume that Mekhi Becton and Denzel Mims are going to take some time to get themselves comfortable in the NFL. I wouldn't have huge expectations early on from those guys.
100%.
I just don't see a scenario where you can think that they're going to be major, major impact players right out of the gate, especially when it's a wide receiver who's coming from Baylor in a system where you only have to do a couple of things. I mean, it's going to be completely different for Mims this year. I don't think he'll be a big factor for the Jet offense probably for at least half a season, if not an entire full season.
Carlin, the Jets will do well to be 7-9 again in 2020.
I think that'd be a massive success.
Yeah, I think they would do well to be that based on where they're at right now. Now, we'll see what they do in the next month or so before the season, but yeah, I don't see this as a 500 club. The only hope that Jets fans should have is that they see significant improvement from Sam Darnold. The offensive line problem looks like it's fixed, and that you have a couple of surprises along the way. Maybe Quinnen Williams breaks out and becomes a force on your defensive line. Maybe Denzel Mims, in the second half of the season, turns into a bona fide player at receiver, kind of like what we saw from DK Metcalf in Seattle. Like, those would be the things that you would look at and say, those are wins. Like, that's progress. That's something that we can build on moving forward. But outside of that, the improvement that you thought you were going to see in the way of wins at the beginning of 2020, it ain't going to be that. It ain't going to be.
Yeah, you're going to, you know what, looking at the schedule, I mean, you're going to get your oil checked early.
Ooh. Oh, yeah.
Tell them about it, Rico.
Tell them about it.
I mean, you're at the Bills, and then you turn around, and you're playing, tell me, the best front seven, top two front seven with the Niners?
Yeah.
Okay. And then you're at the Colts. Broncos will be better. Then you got the Cardinals. Then you're at the Chargers. Bills again. Yeah. At the Chiefs.
Yeah, that sounds good.
That's going to be an adventure. I could absolutely see a scenario where they only win one of those games.
Oh, I could see a scenario where they don't win any of those games.
Yeah, but just think about the matchups, though. They always say matchups make fights, right?
Yeah.
Like, how do you, your strength of your team against the strength of their team, your weakness against their, all the different things. Like, even when the Jets had Jamal Adams, against the mobile quarterback, they're not very good. Josh Allen's one of the more mobile quarterbacks in the NFL. They got a defense that can get after the quarterback. They got a great secondary. Niners, going to get after the quarterback. That's going to be, a huge test for your offensive line.
The only matchup they got a shot in, Rico, is the Colts. It's the only matchup I'm looking at where you say they got a legitimate shot. Everybody else is a bad matchup.
Are they going to? Here's the thing, though, with the Colts. Are they going to be able to get to Phillip Rivers with that offensive line with no pass rush?
Oh, no, they're not. I'm just talking about it. They're absolutely not. Don't get me wrong. But I'm just talking about the Colts' defense going up against the Jets' offense. I'm just saying, they actually have a chance in that matchup.
And then you get Brad Chubb and Von Miller with the Broncos.
Oh, God. You hope they don't cut him in half. You hope they don't cut Sam in half.
Oh, my God almighty.
Melvin Ingram and Joey Bosa, too?
I can't see you right now, Rick, but I just saw you put your head in your hands.
Yeah, it's there. Oh, it's there.
Yeah. Islanders fans, listen up. They're back today at noon. 1-0 lead in their best of five qualifying round against the Florida Panthers. Right now, or just a little bit, you can hear the game on 98.7 ESPN. That is at 12 noon when the puck drops. For your chance to win an Islanders prize pack, text Islanders to 44202 right now. That's Islanders to 44202. That is brought to you by Coors Light, made to chill. Did you guys hear Jeter yesterday?
I did.
Yeah. For those who didn't hear him, he couldn't be more full of it. I don't know.
What is he supposed to say? I mean, what would you like him to say?
Well, here's listen to what he said, and you tell me. I don't know. Here's Jeter on the team's trip to Atlanta.
What it boiled down to on this particular trip was guys were around each other, they got relaxed, and they let their guard down. They were getting together in groups. They weren't wearing masks as much as they should have. They weren't social distancing. Everyone was getting tested. We went the whole spring training 2.0 without a positive. And the entire traveling party got a little too comfortable. Should they have been doing that? No. And that's been addressed. But there is no way to identify how this got into our clubhouse. But any activities on Tuesday night were not it. The entire traveling party is responsible for not following the protocols as is instructed. That includes coaches, staffs, and players. Everyone has seen the impact. They've seen their teammates get sick, and I know they all have a new level of appreciation. Hopefully, you know, this has been a wake-up call for everyone, not only on our team, but the rest of baseball and sports in general. As I mentioned, these guys are sick. Our guys were not running all around town after our game in Atlanta. So I need to ask that stop. They don't deserve that. We did have a couple individuals leave the hotel. In our review, it was determined we had guys leave to get coffee, to get clothes. The guy left to have dinner at a teammate's house. There were no other guests on site. There was no salacious activity. There's no hanging out at bars, no clubs, no running around Atlanta.
Listen, last week when it came up, one of the first things that we heard was Buster Olney talking about a couple of guys, and specifically one guy that they had thought they had traced it back to for going out in Atlanta and not just going to somebody's house. I mean, they weren't going out for coffee. I mean, let's just, you know, he tried to sell
that. I wouldn't discount that.
You think they went out for coffee?
I know guys went out for coffee. Every road trip, I mean, if you're not paying attention, I mean, every single guy, part of your routine for most guys is that you wake up in the morning and you go grab a Starbucks or whatever it is.
No. I'm talking about at night after the game.
I don't think what he was saying was necessarily focused on just the night.
Yeah.
I think in general, when they went through where guys were going, guys were leaving the hotel, which is something that should have been part of the protocols to begin with, that you go from hotel to field and back. That's it. This is like a regular season where you get to do whatever you want.
That's what the NHL's been doing.
But, Carlin, that is the only way with the nature of COVID-19, the incubation period and everything else, the fact that you got guys in the NFL being tested right now that had no idea until they were forced to be tested because they had no symptoms that they had COVID-19, that's the only way to avoid what you're seeing right now in baseball. Because guys have no idea if they have it or if they don't have it. It can be negative on tests for multiple days before it comes up positive. And by that time, it's already been spread through the team.
I understand that. But when he's saying that there's no indication whatsoever that it came from the night out in Atlanta, but then he's suggesting that there is an indication that it came out from guys being sloppy. So,
well, what he's saying is the spread throughout the team, right? The spread in the clubhouse.
Yeah.
The reason why it got so bad and you got 19 members of the organization with positive tests is because guys, once they got into the clubhouse, they weren't properly social distancing. They weren't wearing masks. And if you're not following the protocols 100%, then what happened to the Marlins could happen to you. So I think Jeter was right in saying what he was saying, as it's a wake-up call for not only them, but everybody around baseball and everybody in the sports world. But ultimately, the responsibility falls on Derek Jeter, the team president for the Marlins, the players, and Major League Baseball. Because this scenario was, I'm not going to say completely avoidable, but it could have been minimized if you had a compliance officer on every single team, if you restricted the movements of the players once you started with the return to play. All of those measures could have been put in place so you wouldn't have a spread like we saw with them that had a domino effect and affected, you know, four or five other teams. That could have been minimized.
But that's to your point, Chris. That's exactly why. I mean, it seems foolish, some of the stuff. I mean, if you're playing, you know, part of the NBA bubble, right? You can't play doubles ping pong. Or if, I mean, you're in a clubhouse, you know, rain delays. I mean, being 6 feet apart. It's like, well, if you're on the field with no mask on, why would you do that? Well, you would do that because of, you know, if one guy goes out and catches it, doesn't know he has it. If you have your mask on and you're keeping distance, then maybe it doesn't, you know, go rampant through the clubhouse.
Exactly. It's why the Boston Red Sox were getting dressed in luxury suites, right?
Mm-hmm. You know, because you just don't know.
Four or five guys, you know, confined to a certain area, and they're getting dressed properly, socially distanced. Like that's the responsibility. Because Rick's right, you don't know. With the incubation period is somewhere between 48 and 72 hours between the time you get it to when they can detect it on a test. Like, but the lag time from when you take the test to when you actually get the results, there's a lot of different variables in there. And in order to try to limit, somebody that's infected with COVID, you know, spreading it and transmitting it to other people, you try to do your best while you're going about your business playing the game of baseball to try to keep everybody safe. And the Miami Marlins clearly didn't do that, which is why it ran rampant through their clubhouse.
Well, it was at least hopefully, and they've obviously got the situation with the Cardinals right now. Hopefully, somebody is actually paying attention across baseball now to understand that you have to do it this strictly at this point. I mean, if you can't get it, and pardon me for questioning the judgment of 23-year-old guys with money in their pocket. You know, if they're not following and paying attention across baseball right now, then I don't know. I mean, like, if we run into this with another team and it's because guys went out,
it's going to happen. It's going to happen.
But, CeCe, here's the thing, man. You can't leave it up to the players. Like, you can't leave it up to the players.
I know
we're saying that we have to get the cooperation of the players, and that is true to a degree, but we cannot leave it up to the players. We have to let the players know that if we're going to play baseball, if we're going to finish the season, if you guys want the money that we promised you under our new agreement, then we're going to have to restrict your movements. You're not going to be able to have the freedoms that you had to be able to go get coffee or to go to dinner at some guy's house. You're not going to be able to do that, okay? You're going to have to be isolated to the team hotel in the areas we designate in the ballparks. That's it. That's what you got. Mm. That's what it should be. I mean, you saw what the New Orleans Saints are doing with their training camp. They're creating a bubble. Players can go from the hotel to the team facility, and that's it. 150 people, authorized personnel only. That's what it has to be. We don't have a handle on this virus across the country. We're in the middle of a pandemic, and you're trying to play professional sports. There are going to have to be some sacrifices for the players. You're going to have to give up some of the liberties that you have. But that's just what it is. Playing professional sports is a privilege. It's not a right. So if you want to be involved in the game and you want to get your check, this is how we're going to have to do it. Otherwise, we're not going to be able to protect the integrity of the season. It already looks ridiculous with what's happened with the Marlins and what's happened with the Phillies and now what's happening with the Cardinals.
Yeah, I mean, I hate to admit this. I mean, as a former professional athlete, I mean, Chris will say the same thing. I mean, unfortunately, we can't be trusted. We can't do it.
Yeah.
We can't help ourselves. I mean, even some of the small things like, hey, you don't have to slap five and all this. I mean, they can't. You watch these games, they can't help themselves.
Yeah,
and I get frustrated. I'm like, why? You don't need to. Just don't high five. Don't touch each other, please. Just go 66 days without hugging and touching each other, please. We can't help it. We can't do it.
And then there's Luis Rojas last night, and you know you got JD Davis. I guess was getting tested, and he wasn't feeling great. Test came back negative, and he had, I guess, some sort of a stomach ache, and they weren't sure that he was going to be able to play yesterday. Now, they already had the issues with McNeil and Rosario and Cano that popped up later, and Davis was almost unable to play. So here's Rojas on what happened.
The upset stomach was probably from something he ate, or I don't know, we're talking about that. Then before the game, I saw him eating Chick-fil-A. I was like, what are you doing?
First of all, I mean, it's Chick-fil-A. It's not White Castle. You know, it's not going to knock
Chick-fil-A.
You out for a week.
Yeah, but it's Chick-fil-A before you're playing a baseball game.
What's your point?
That doesn't scream greatest pre. As much as I love Chick-fil-A, it's delicious. That doesn't scream to me like, what's the best way to fuel myself up for a game tonight?
I guess we have different philosophies about that. That's just me.
No, but I think it just said, listen, and there's plenty of guys that do it. I mean, I've been in, clubhouses and everything else, but I mean, recently in clubhouses, I think you've seen more guys be stricter with their diets. I mean, I remember the first time I went with the Mets, I won't say his name. This was Nacho Gate. I mean, he had just pitched the day before and, he comes in. No, I'm not even joking. He comes in and this is my first experience. I'm sitting with Piazza and we're eating. Piazza's having a bowl of cereal. He's like, you want one? I was like, yeah, I'll have a bowl of cereal. Absolutely. The pitcher comes walking in. He's got his shirt of his uniform open, white T-shirt underneath. He's got a drumstick ice cream cone in one hand, and then he goes over to the nachos, and they have like a concession stand nacho cheese container, and he's just sitting there dipping nachos into the cheese container, dripping cheese on his uniform. I was like, where the hell am I?
What?
That was baseball.
Wow.
Come on, you got to say who that was.
I can't. I've gone, what has it been, 5, 6, 7 years? I have not said the name yet.
Well, I mean,
I was in shock, though. I couldn't believe it.
He's out of the game by now.
He's out of the game now.
Yeah.
Okay. No surprise with his diet. Treating his body like an amusement park.
Exactly.
Here's my only point. Chick-fil-A, okay, you want to say it's not the best way to fuel up? Could have been eating a grilled chicken sandwich. I mean,
yeah, but why even? But Carl, the point is, and I know we're sitting.
Maybe
here joking,
I don't get this. I'm joking around, but maybe I don't get this because I don't get beat up by Chick-fil-A. It's more like settling my stomach than anything else.
Yeah, you react perfectly to it. I mean, your body is built. I mean, your body runs on food like Chick-fil-A. I mean, that's how you roll. I mean, you're putting regular unleaded in that thing, and in professional athlete, you want to be putting premium. And you open yourself up for the possibility that it doesn't sit well in your stomach.
There's a lot of it I can't eat anymore.
Look at the athletes that take, I mean, that have, you know, unbelievable longevity, that really take care of their bodies, that spend, you know, millions of dollars on, you know, body work, nutrition, and everything else. If you ask, you know, Tom Brady, hey, Tom, you want to have a Chick-fil-A sandwich before the game? He'd punch you in the face.
I'm just sitting here thinking about it. Like, what would Bill Parcells say if I told him I had a tummy ache because I ate Chick-fil-A before the game? Like, I just like
slap you in the face.
What do you expect Tom Coughlin to do with that? Like, I couldn't even imagine. It's ridiculous.
Well, then to actually have the manager walking on you eating Chick-fil-A, to have the nerve to complain later that you have a tummy ache after you just saw you eating Chick-fil-A.
That's like when I used to, you know, my stomach hurts, I want to stay home from school, and then, you know, at noon, can we get McDonald's? You know?
Yeah, exactly right.
Yeah.
Or your kid has, you know, 5 cookies after dinner, and then he's like, oh, my stomach doesn't feel good. Well, I told you not to eat 5 cookies, didn't I?
Yeah. Well, listen,
I don't know, man. It's always something with the Mets, man.
Maybe I'm just a little more sympathetic to his plight at that point. It might just be my perspective.
Chris, that is more a treat for after the game. That's what you would look forward to after the game.
Yeah.
In Buffalo, like big win in Buffalo. You're back in the locker room. You got, I mean, tables of Buffalo wings. You got roast beef sandwiches. I mean, depending on the city, like Montreal, big win. You got, you know, 150 hot dogs. I mean, that's like stuff after the game that you treat yourself to. That wouldn't be what you eat before pregame meal.
Yeah. No, you're absolutely right, Rick. For us, if you got a big win on a road trip, it was the spicy chicken from Popeyes. 3-piece with the biscuit and red beans and rice.
Because you earned it.
Yeah, because you earned it. Yeah.
Yeah,
Didn't, if you didn't win, you know what you got? That cold cut sandwich. That's what you got.
Yeah, you got the box lunch.
You got the box
lunch. And then you'd be like, where's the beer? Oh, no beer for you guys today.
No beer.
You guys get nothing, just water.
I still haven't done the comparison. I need to do the comparison.
I'm doing it. I actually almost talked myself into it. I said to my wife, because we've been doing this thing like every week, we kind of go on like an excursion for food. Yeah. And we've been going pizza, we went tacos, and I said, we got to just do it. Like, I mean, at some point, we got to go Popeyes, we got to go get me a Popeyes, a Wendy's, and a Chick-fil-A. I want to go, like, all of it. I want to go burgers, chicken sandwiches, I want to just try them all again, and then repower rank them.
I think that's a solid play. I mean, if
I feel like we owe it to ourselves, don't we?
I think the Popeyes chicken sandwich still comes out on top, just personal opinion.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you. I think I probably would agree with that.
I will knock this out before the end of the week, I promise.
Of the people on the show currently, I would feel like you owe it to the listeners to give us your opinion. I mean, your opinion
would matter
the most.
Well, it's tantamount to you giving your opinion on professional sports as former professional athletes. That's what it is.
Yeah, you're the insider. You're the expert. You're like you should be like the Woj of fast food.
Like when I wouldn't call myself an insider. I would call myself more of a participant. I would. Like, you can't
like
tell me
you're like a fast
tons.
Food critic. A fast
yes,
food critic.
Exactly.
Like,
you
like
guys,
Ebert and Roper with films, like that's how you are with fast food.
Exactly. Yeah. If there has to have been a time since you guys have moved into doing this where you've looked at somebody like me and said, you never played. You're an idiot. You don't know what the hell you're talking about here. Well, that's kind of how I would feel in this instance.
No, that's kind of how you treat me when I do food CMTs on text message. You embarrass me.
I don't embarrass you. That's not
like we could actually do another version of Sav. You could do a whole different, like you have the Yankees Savages in the box.
Yeah.
You could do like a whole different one, which is like Savages in, you know, a takeout box.
I got time. Jesus is in Jersey. Up next, 98.7 ESPN. Jesus, what's going on?
Yes, fellas, great show. Love it. Chris Canty, thank you for being a part of the defense, bringing it home.
My man.
All right, so this question is...
What are you doing, rotating your tires? What's going on?
I'm working. I'm going to stop now, but real quick, this question is more for MC Ricky D. You think it's still early to apologize to the Giants for passing on Sam Darnold?
No, I don't think it's too early. I mean, you needed a quarterback. You had no idea it was going to work out the way it worked out. You can pretend like this is how we planned it. You had no idea that you were going to get Saquon with the second overall pick and be so bad that you had the opportunity to get Daniel Jones. Stop, please.
Plus, what happens if you're trading Saquon next year? Because you have a new GM and you don't want to invest that much money into a running back.
Yeah, but you can invest that money into a running back because you're not paying your quarterback any money.
Not yet, but I still don't know that a new GM is going to want to do that. I'm just kind of counting on the fact that they're going to have a new GM at this point, Chris, because...
It depends on how the year goes for Saquon. If you're talking about him leading the league in all-purpose yards and being one of the top rushers in the NFL, then yeah, you'd probably give him an extension after this season. But if you're talking about another year where he misses several games due to injury, I'm not giving him a contract extension.
I wouldn't either, and I don't think he's going to be in a situation, Rick, next year to get the McCaffrey money. I don't think that's going to happen.
Well, McCaffrey ended up being in a, you know, that was a perfect storm for him. I mean, he's the most dynamic offensive weapon in the league, and they lost the face of their franchise with Cam Newton. I mean, they lost multiple. I mean, between him, Keekly was gone. I mean, he was the
McCaffrey
new face of the
and Matt Rule are the only reason you're interested in Carolina.
Exactly.
So that's why they gave him the money.
DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg, weekdays at 10 on 98.7 ESPN.